Welcome to the Overdrive Outdoors Podcast,
your source for coyote hunting, fishing, and more.
We're calling West Texas, and we're filming, and we called 36 coyotes in one night.
3 years ago, I had in one morning 6 bucks that were 3.5 and older within 50 yards of my stand. 6 different bucks, one morning.
It was in October, went made my first coyote stand, me and my cousin. And very first freaking stand, guys, we caught up 7 coyotes. 7 coyotes.
Florida itself is a fisherman's paradise. We stick out in the middle of the water, man. There's water everywhere.
Let's kick it into overdrive.
This podcast brought to you by Predator Hunter Outdoors. Locally owned and operated out of Attica, Michigan, Predator Hunter Outdoors will keep you hunting when the sun goes down. Predator Hunter Outdoors has something for every budget and experience level, including lights, night vision, and thermal, as well as a full line of tripods, mounts, and predator calls. Look them up on Facebook and Instagram at Predator Hunter Outdoors, or visit their webpage at www.predatorhunteroutdoors.com. Enter the promo code LIGHT for 20% off light products, and TRIPOD for 10% off tripods and mounts. With today's technology, hunters in the field have more tools than ever to maximize their outdoor experiences. One of those tools is a Grand Rapids, Michigan-based HuntWise app. The HuntWise Pro app is loaded with features including property lines, landowner data, windcast, huntcast, over 250 map layers including 3D maps, a localized rut indicator, as well as discounts of 20% off various name brand products. Step up to the Elite membership and you will get all of that plus HuntCast 2.0 with customizable alerts, Whitetail 365, which gives you season dates and local rut times, as well as the best time to plant your food plots, a 15-day hunt forecast, and 40 to 50% discount on name brand products. Enter code OVERDRIVE for 20% off your membership to HuntWise. Hey everybody, Kevin with Overdrive Outdoors here tonight with my special guest and good buddy, Mr. Josh Mapes.
Hello. Hello.
Doing good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. A lot of stuff going on, but I'm doing all right. Beautiful weather we got finally compared to what we dealt with Friday and Saturday.
Is it not just as windy up there today as it is down here?
You know, it's windy, but sun is shining and it's like over 40.
I almost lost a galvanized steel tank out of the back of my truck on the way home because of the wind.
Really? That bad, huh?
Dude, it's windy here.
Wow.
Not just, much different than it was in Ohio Friday.
You know, I was down in Muskegon here a couple hours ago, and down in Muskegon, it was real, real windy. But here, it's not bad. It's not great, but it's not bad. I mean, not like I said, not like what we were dealing with Friday night and Saturday.
I'll show you this real quick. My landowner locally just sent me this. That's from this morning.
Nice.
Coyote in the field. Looks like probably the same one I could have sped up and potentially got some fur down last week running in front of the truck.
Right.
Yeah, but no, it was super windy here today. It was definitely nicer to be out in the warmth.
See where that red circle is?
I can't see anything on that.
Can't see that red circle?
That picture was taken on a potato. No, I can't see that red circle.
So, right there.
Okay. Nobody else could see what we're looking at. Yeah. What are we looking at?
Anyway, that was one of my landowners. He was walking his property and seeing that coyote out there this morning.
Rodney. Oh, he saw it in person.
Mm-hmm.
I had a guy message me this morning and say, hey, you want 2 coyotes? And he lives... I know he hunts this one of the same farms I do. He said, shot one of them offhand at 200 yards. That one's still out there, got blood, but he was leaving it lay for a couple hours and dropped the other one. So I know they're moving, but man, getting out there is, I got other stuff going on that's taking up time right now.
Right. You and me both.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, on our trip, for those that don't know, we really didn't do much on Facebook or anything in the last week. We went to Ohio Friday night. What was that? The 18th, 17th, yeah, I think. 17th. And we went down there with every thought of hunting for the whole weekend, coming home on Sunday. And that first night we got there, we bought our licenses And I think it was like 9 o'clock we walked out that door. Yeah. And I told you, if I would have walked outside my door and that much wind hit me in the face back at home, I would have been going right back inside and sitting comfortably all night.
Yeah, I think I remember hearing you tell that to Tony.
Yeah. Yeah, it was
windier than heck.
But it was a dang good start.
It was.
The calling in aspect.
Yeah. I mean, what, we had 3 stands and seen 8 coyotes?
Yeah, it wasn't in the first 3, I guess. I think we had 1 or 2 blanks in between that.
Okay.
The first one was 3.
Mm-hmm.
And that one was kind of interesting because we had to set up right on top of those first 2 that you lip squeaked to us to tell us were there.
Mm-hmm.
We did TT, Waylon, and Jesse. And Kevin, tell them what we were doing with the calls.
So we're just trying a different strategy. And I've been wanting to do this for a while, but want to do vocals with 2 different callers set apart from each other.
Yep.
To make it sound like, you know, different locations, different coyotes in the same field.
And now also you had a Fox Pro, I had a Lucky Duck.
Right. Yep. So what Josh was doing, or whoever called first, was starting off with a pair howl.
Yep.
And then we would answer the pair howl from the other caller.
Yep.
Was how we were starting off, I think, all those stands for the most part.
Yep. Yeah. And I mean, that first stand, I did TT, Waylon, and Jesse. And I think you answered it. I don't remember what sound you answered it with. I know you answered me, though.
Yeah, I did a different one each time.
And then it was like, well, we were looking behind us because a couple of the guys we were with thought that those were coyotes coming down the road, but they were, I don't remember. I don't even know what that thing was, but it certainly was not a coyote. It might have been like a small house dog.
Okay.
But it wasn't a coyote.
Okay.
And then we all were watching that while you're sitting there, must have been scanning like the smart person. And we hear, and we all turn around. And sure enough, could you see both of them when you did that or just the one?
I could see. That was when we had 3 of them, right?
That was when the one was sitting on his ass right outside that wood line looking at us. Where the truck pulled by us and then turned around and stopped. Remember that?
No.
Oh my gosh, you're blanking already.
I'm thinking the one where we had the
first one I missed on it.
Oh, that one. Okay. No, on that spot I seen 2 animals in the woods.
Yep.
And I at first I was thinking they were deer.
This is harder for us to explain because none of this was our property.
Right.
We were guests of other people.
We were basically along a drainage ditch, if I remember right. And there was a big field in front of us. There's a patch of woods across the field and the drainage ditch ran behind us and off to our right. It kind of made a V towards that corner of the wood line and then a field beyond the drainage ditch. So straight out from us though, in that tree line, there was 2 animals there and I was watching them, but they weren't moving around a lot. So I kind of thought they were deer, but once they actually stepped out of the wood line, then I could tell for sure that that was a coyote.
Yeah, and it,
originally only the first one came out.
So, and when you lip squeaked at us, it just sat there. Mm-hmm. It was sitting on its butt, just staring around.
That's how I knew it was a coyote for sure.
Yep. And then we could see the second one kind of jumping around back in the brush back in there. And that one never even touched its feet in that field.
It disappeared.
Yep. And I know they had mentioned that they had a spot like that before where they have to get really close to it. But I don't know if it was that particular spot. But yeah, that one. The first one came out, sat down, and just kept turning his head. And we were playing. You played a fight sound. If I'm not mistaken, it was probably TT Light Fight.
Yeah.
And it didn't even care. I mean, it just got up and walked the edge of the tree line. Well, then I don't remember what we did in between that. But all of a sudden, we caught one coming from the other field over down the drainage ditch that I should not have been set up on, but I was.
Right. Only,
I shouldn't have, not for legality reasons, but you'll hear the story here. And I could see that one. It looked like it was coming, but it also looked like it was going further around us, like to meet up with those 2 that had came out of the woods.
Yeah, it was swinging wide.
Yeah, and you had turned off your call, I think, and I turned on Tony Tebby's grab ass, and that thing changed its direction now. And well, I mean, it's been a while since I've been out. I really haven't been putting much time behind the gun. There was a lot of wind that night, mostly crosswind in my face. Fingers were cold. Scope might have fogged up. I really have no clue, but inside 100, Kevin?
Yeah.
Easily?
I mean, it was probably like 70 yards.
Oh, long. I could have thrown a baseball. And I missed it. Frontal.
Yep.
Frontal shot. I hate that shot. I don't hate it because of effectiveness. No. I hate it because it's a smaller target.
Yeah.
And I haven't even checked the video on that one yet, but Tony's video looks like I was in line, but just high.
Yep.
And I got to figure that out because the last one I shot at was about the same distance. And you remember I airballed that one too.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a frontal shot. So I got to figure out what in the world I'm doing. But needless to say, there was three shots ended up fired on that coyote. And Tony came real close one time. That thing zigged shifted gears real fast.
All right.
But then we quit shooting and never saw another one on that set. But
yep.
Yeah, first Mapes of the Ohio weekend.
Right.
First and only, I guess. I can say that.
But then that, I don't know if it was next set or two sets after that where we had the three.
Yep.
Right off that was a pretty crazy set too, and I did check that. I do have that on video on my OTS.
Oh, the audio.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah.
So I didn't.
That was the second set we did.
Second set, yeah. I got them howling in the video out there from that wood edge. I didn't get them running through like Tony posted in his video with all the birds taken off. I didn't have that because I was getting on the rifle.
You're getting ahead of yourself. Let's tell them how this kind of setup was, because this is way different kinds of ground than what we have back at home.
And that's something you and I talked about. I mean, it's a lot flatter and there's more open areas and small patches of woods versus we have more woods with smaller open areas.
Yeah. And you, in my opinion, out there, it is very hard to determine what is going to be 100% safe.
Yeah, because there's a lot of houses and farms all over the place.
And some of them are 2-3 miles away, but you can still see them. So at this second spot, we were set up right behind the landowner's barn. And I set my call up kind of upwind at a 45. And I think you went basically straight out from us.
That was a little bit to the right, but yeah.
So I started again, Tony, Tebby, Waylon, and Jesse. And I don't even know if you had gotten yours out yet.
When they howled initially, it's actually in the video that I got. You can hear my howl in there right after they start to end their howl. And that's what got them coming.
So between me hitting Waylon and Jesse and you answering Waylon and Jesse, I had already seen them coming then.
Right.
Because we saw them coming way from the left.
Okay.
And then they got
to
that.
They didn't come straight out of those woods. They came from around.
No, they came from that field way out to our left.
Okay.
And I could see them all running. And then as soon as they hit that wood line, they all lit up and woo! I'm like, oh, yeah. Right. I love that. And I don't see that very often.
Right.
Do you see that?
I mean, yeah, a few times a year, but not a lot.
Yeah, not.
Usually when I hear them howl, I can't see them.
Well, and I think that's got a lot to do with how much ground they can hide in around here.
Yep.
I mean, I'm not anybody from these different states that got wide open areas. Do you all see them howl more? Because we hear them howl. I don't usually hear them howl and see them out in the field. I usually hear them howl and they're somewhere back in the woods.
Usually if I get howls, it's an aggressive howl and they're already close with an aggressive howl. But if it's just like a response or something like that, generally speaking, they're in the woods somewhere.
Right.
Wait for them to come.
It's just not something that I usually will see and hear them at the exact same time.
Yep.
And I mean, I know Tony Tebby's got videos where they stand there and howl.
Oh, sure.
We've got video this weekend now in the middle of the night where they're standing out there howling. It's just not something we get to see. But so you ended up answering me while they were talking to me.
Yeah. Just at the end of when they started to taper off on their howling.
And then they got on it.
Oh, yeah. They were coming strong.
They got on it fast. Now, there was three coyotes coming. One of them ducked into that wood line and never showed his face.
Yeah, again. See, I don't think I ever seen that third one.
Oh yeah, he where they made the wrap around the backside of that trees, he went straight into it or around the backside. I have no idea, but I never saw him once he broke off left and left those other two. But you could tell there was another one. I'm surprised you didn't think there was another one by the way they kept looking behind them running in.
I guess I didn't pay that much attention to it. Honestly, I was watching them come in.
Fired.
Okay. I was watching them come in, watching those birds take off, and then that rabbit ran across in front of us. And
oh, there were so many birds flying up. Yeah.
And not only that, but I had seen something off to my right, so I'm looking over there too.
Yeah, I think that was a skunk.
Skunk or a raccoon, something like that. Awesome, but, whatever.
So you played your reply howls. Did we have anything going when shots were getting fired?
No.
So it was on. They only came to howls, and it was all done within 5 minutes, probably.
Oh yeah, easy.
Easy. Actually, I do have that video from a second angle, but I left that with Tony, so you guys will have to see that video on Mountain Lodge page.
Yeah.
But yeah, we ended up calling in those two, and where Tony and or where Kevin and I were standing when they finally stopped and gave us shots, we could not shoot. I mean, there was a barn in the background of our shots. Now, the people that were off the sides of us, they did not have anything in our background. Mm-hmm. That's kind of part of splitting up, making sure you guys can shoot stuff. But we did not take shots. They were both on more on our sides, and I would say 100 yards.
Yeah, if not less.
Yeah, I mean, looked real good in thermal, I can tell you that much. But there was three shots ended up fired on that one, and Tony anchored it looked like a decent male. We honestly never really, I don't think we even took a picture. Nobody ever weighed it.
No.
So, I mean, we were just kind of rolling with the weather night.
It's probably still in the back of Tony's truck.
It might be.
Take a picture.
That's going to be on rolling coal here pretty soon.
Right.
Cooking some coyote.
Right.
But no, that was a good action pack two sets.
Right.
But that wind was a killer that night.
Yeah.
Either way, I was blown away that we had even seen that many at all that night with how high a wind we had.
Yep. And then we had another set later in the night too, where we actually had some pretty darn good vocals too, coming out of behind the woods.
Yeah.
Brad said he figured they were by a creek back there or something.
He said a half mile into that woods was a creek, and he thought they were on our side. Yep.
But we never seen those.
No, I don't believe they were on our side. I feel like they were probably on the other side of the creek. But we did have two of them come in from the other side of the road. And
way out there.
Yeah, way out there. And he had permission on both sides of the road there. So we walked over there, and I just got on the Green Nasty and kind of played some rabbit on that. And that thing seemed like he might have been a called coyote before. He stayed out there quite a little ways. There was, I think, two shots fired at that one, and that one got away. I never pulled the trigger after the first set, and I don't think you pulled the trigger at all.
I did not.
See, got to let you shoot so we get some coyotes down. No, it was a good weekend, though, but after that, I mean, I had been up since 4:30 at that Friday morning. It was, I think we called it quits at, what, 2?
Yeah, about 2 o'clock, 2:30.
And I fell asleep in the truck on the ride home. So, I mean, but then waking up the next day after standing in that wind, man, felt like I had been hit by a truck.
It didn't bother me that much. I mean, I was
tired. You're shorter. The wind goes right over you.
That could be. And I was standing, you know, with someone else beside me. They blocked it from me. Maybe. Exactly. I don't know.
No, I was tired. I was beat. That wind was almost every setup we made. I feel like the wind was pretty much coming right into our eyeballs.
It was steady, and then it would gust off being steady too.
Yeah, and the steady was heavy enough.
Yeah.
No, yeah. But we had a good time, though. I think we made 6 sets, saw 8 coyotes.
Yep.
That's not bad. No. And only we should have had, in all reality, I'd say 2 did.
Yeah.
Because the other ones never gave us a good shot where they were wide open.
Right.
You know, so it was a good weekend, though.
Yep. Yeah, it was fun for sure, other than the wind, like you said. But we had better weather up there, and we were getting back home at least. So
yeah. No. My wife was texting me all the time about how much snow we were getting and how bad the wind was. And then you decided we were going to drive home in it.
When I got home, I bet you we still only had about an inch and a half of snow at my house, and it's all gone now.
Yeah, ours is all gone now too, but I had the snow blow yesterday.
Really?
Oh,
I
yeah.
Didn't have to do that here. Like I said, only about an inch and a half.
Yeah, I got to get better at telling the kids to put their stuff on to go sledding and then just locking the door and telling them we'll go after the driveway is shoveled.
Right. There you go. Yep. So tell us what new venture you're going into, Josh. See, one of the things that at least, you know, Josh and I and a couple of the other guys on the team like to do is, I guess you could equate it closest to homesteading, self-reliance.
Fend for ourselves.
Self-reliance. And you are now venturing into a new aspect of that.
Yeah. For about, well, a year or more now, my wife's been saying, man, eggs are getting so expensive. And I see eggs getting expensive. And I like to eat eggs. And I also like to eat chicken. So I've been telling her no to chickens for a long time just because, in all reality, this location I am living in, it does not, I have no intention of it being my forever home. So I've been kind of wanting to figure out what I was going to do before I get any animals that I got to take care of, got to worry about. But after talking to you more this weekend on a ride, I decided today I was going to stop and get the family 6 chickens, which, man, as soon as I got home with it, I don't know if them chickens ever touched the floor or anything after that, because there was kids all around holding them. And I mean, it's good to see them all excited, but I told them all, you know, now everybody's got another responsibility, because this is something for us all to work on, all of us to grow. And Alicia, my wife, says, oh, I wish you would have told me, because, and you had said it too, a lot of people will sell them started, you know, where they're ready to go, already dropping eggs. And I told her that's not the way I wanted to go. Honestly, if I would have known I could have bought eggs to incubate and turn into chickens, I would have done that so they get the whole thing.
Well, I mean, if you get a rooster, you still can.
I am not getting a rooster. I talked to the lady at Tractor Supply about that. She said, well, these ones are Tractor Supply, Holland, Michigan. Shout out to them. Probably nobody will listen, but thank you for your help to the nice chicken lady there. I said, what do I do if I get a rooster? She said, well, the ones you're buying, I want to say they're silver and gold Wyandotte.
Okay.
But 80% guaranteed that I would only get females. 20% I might get a rooster. And I said, well, what do I do if I get a rooster? Because I do not want that thing crowing every day. She said, do you like to eat chicken?
Right.
I said, yes, I do. So I guess I have a plan already. I just don't want that thing squawking around here all the time. I live, my intention with getting anything like this is for my family to do things more on our own while not pissing off the rest of the neighborhood. You know, she says when I get home, well, now I just need a goat. I'm like, hell, I'm not getting a goat right here. We need, in my opinion, a couple acres where nobody's going to be bothered by the stuff around me. Not that I necessarily care about pissing a few people off, but I, even with the chickens, I talk to you. I don't want them just roaming around, going into people's yards. I kicked somebody else's chicken out of my garden last year. I don't want to be that guy. So I kind of talked to the lady about that, and she told me some things to do, you know, if they start flying and getting braver. But yeah, we're going into the egg farming business.
Remember how I told you when we left Friday, there was one egg in my coop?
Yep.
Today I went and collected the eggs. I had 7.
See, and that's like a couple days worth. I try to eat 2 eggs every day with breakfast.
Yep.
And at the end of the week, I mean, it might not be that much, but also on Saturdays, I might throw a half a dozen eggs in a pan and make something for the family, or pancakes or bread that requires it or anything like that. So it's not like I have plenty use for a lot of eggs, and I'm tired of paying for these people who are robbing the farmers for it.
Right.
I'm sorry.
Well, not only that, but like I said, they're animals that you grow, so you know what they're fed, how they're treated. To me, that's a lot. And apparently, according to my wife, she can definitely tell the difference between our farm raised eggs, if you want to call living in little town of Montague a farm, versus store-bought eggs. She actually prefers store-bought eggs because they don't taste as eggy, according to her. See, I don't understand it, but whatever.
I guess that's everybody's own flavor, yeah. But...
And she'll use them to bake or whatever, but yeah. She just doesn't want to eat them straight up.
Yeah, no, and I mean, like I said, everything, you've seen some of the stuff. I'm trying to learn to do stuff myself without needing anybody. I'm trying to learn cast iron pans because one day, if I can have nothing but a wood stove in my house, I will be a happy person.
Here's a question for you. Do you have a side burner on any of your grills?
No.
Oh, okay. See, now I have on my grill that I can use like cast iron on or a wok or whatever. Is that side
yeah. burner? No, I don't have any of that. I've just got a propane side and a charcoal side. That's why I'm you've kind of heard about some of the other stuff I'm going to be making. I'm building my own smokehouse in my backyard out of a 50-gallon drum. And actually, this is in a home sausage cooking book that came with a sausage maker I was given for Christmas. It's basically 10 feet of 6-inch like wood stove exhaust pipe with a 90 at the end, and it buries under the ground, that pipe. The 90 comes up into the bottom of a 50-gallon drum, and then the other end of the exhaust goes into a smoke box, a fire box, and I'm trying to learn how to do that too, because smoked sausage, man, jerky, anything that I can just leave on smoke for a while and turn it into something else without having to go buy it, like smoked sausage. I made that smoked sausage macaroni yesterday. That granted, it is really good. There's a little bit too much oil in it, and I don't know where that came from, honestly, but that smoked sausage might have only been $2.50 on sale. But if I could have that smoked sausage be out of a deer that I went and shot in the wintertime, it will taste that much better to me.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm trying to learn the least amount of times I can go to the store and pay for people that don't need to be making millions off of raising prices on everybody else, the happier I'll be. And in the end, if I can kind of help, you know, like venison for you, if you need some venison and I got plenty of it, dude, I will give it to you. You know, I would rather be the guy that people come to saying, hey, I need some help. I need some eggs. Can you help me? I would rather be that guy, because for a long time, I've been the guy saying, hey, I'm the guy that needs eggs. Can you help me?
And speaking of eggs, going back to eggs, once you get your chickens producing them, you need to try some pickled eggs.
I'll try some.
Because they are delicious.
See, but it depends on how much pickling's in them, because I've had some pickled stuff where all I could taste is the vinegar, and I hate vinegar. So, I mean, I'll definitely try them, though. I mean, 6 chickens, if they all start producing, will hopefully be putting out more eggs than I can eat in a day.
Somebody told me once that if you go and buy, and you could do it yourself with a jar that you, like, did some pickles in.
Yep.
But you could go to town and buy, like, Famous Dave's spicy pickles.
Yep.
Take the pickles out, throw hard-boiled eggs in there.
Yeah.
Tap it, let them sit for however long it takes.
Yep.
Boom. Done.
Yeah, I'm sure you could do that. That there's another way. There was something else being pickled. Fish, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we talked about that. The same way.
Yeah.
Just leave it in something like that for a week, I think they said. But, you know, there's a learning process to it. Leaving it in too long is going to turn into mush.
Yep.
And I don't want that, you know. So, yeah, I'll definitely try it. But this is the first step. You know, this is – I'm taking steps slowly to put myself where I want to be, which means – not spending the majority of our paychecks on groceries. I got 3 kids.
Right.
We're not a small family, and they all eat.
So with where you live, what predators are you going to have to worry about having those chickens outside?
I was just talking to the kids about that. So I, coyotes, possibly, obviously, I hunt near my house. There's a good possibility of coyotes coming into my yard. I have never, not one time, seen a track from one right here. I've never seen a fox track right here. However, 3 doors down, I've seen fox. So I know there's fox. I'm going to definitely have to worry about hawks, because they circle all over here. I live right across the street from like a butcher shop, basically. And there's birds all over. Hawks, crows, we got bald eagles. I don't know. Crows, you think, mess with chickens? Probably not.
I don't think crows will. We got crows around here. I usually call in the crows here to chase the hawks away from my chickens.
Oh, that's true. Crow hawk fight. You see that call a lot.
Yep. What happens? We've had hawks come in after our chickens a couple times. And then most recently we had a falcon in the yard, and there's times where I'll come home and I can hear one screeching from some trees a little ways away.
Yep.
So I'll whip out one of the calls, turn it on, crow gathering, crow fight, whatever. Crank it up. Crows come in, hawks gone.
Yeah, that's a simple way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I was talking to the kids about that because raccoons, definitely a possibility. I have not seen one right here, but right down the road I can hunt them. I know they're here. I live by farm fields.
Right.
I mean, I might even have to worry about snakes. Because snakes are egg eaters, aren't they?
Smaller snakes, chickens will kill them. Chickens will kill mice, they'll kill chipmunks, they'll kill snakes.
See, now what about a big blue racer? What do you think will happen to that? Because we've got some 3-4 foot long blue racers around here.
I don't know.
I know we have snakes every year. A lot of times it's just garter snakes, but man, I know that some snakes eat eggs. So right. I might have to worry about that. Possums, a lot of possums.
See, now I've had a possum in my chicken coop.
Yep.
And the chickens were all wound up. I knew about it because in the summertime, my yard is completely fenced in, so my chickens free range. They go into the coop at night, get in their nesting box. That's where they sleep, right? 2-3 o'clock in the morning, all of a sudden I hear the chickens going nuts. I look outside and they're all by the back door underneath the yard light. I go out there looking around with a flashlight. Sure enough, there's a possum inside the nesting box.
Now, was it trying to take your eggs?
That would probably be the only reason I could think of it would be in there.
It's not going to go after your actual chickens, you think?
I think it might go after chicks, but I don't think it'd go after adult chickens. Generally speaking, you know as well as I do, possums aren't real fast movers. And it's pretty easy for a chicken to get away from a possum unless they're trapped in something.
Yeah.
So I think more than likely it'd be after the eggs.
So basically my goal, and I told the kids, this is all going to be a family project. You know, on the back of my garage, I used to have that shed kind of lean-to piece of crap that I tore down.
Yep.
I'm going to reuse that wood that I got on the side of the building from that, and I'll make my chicken coop that side because
there you go.
As far as I understand, you want them to have sunlight,
mm-hmm.
right? So that side of the house, which would be the south side of my house, will have sunlight year-round. Because the sun goes right over top of that. There's no trees, no nothing. But yeah, we're gonna turn this into a family event. That they've all been asking me, and I finally gave in. And you know, I've told you before, I gave in on a cat once, and nobody does anything that they said they were gonna do for that thing.
Yeah, but unless you like Chinese, you're not gonna eat the cat. Whereas a chicken's pretty easy to eat a chicken.
Hey. I've eaten fox, I've eaten woodchuck, I've eaten porcupine. Don't put stuff past me.
I gave you some of my bobcat, didn't I?
No, I've never had bobcat.
Oh, shoot, I'll have to give you some. I think I still have some.
I'll try it for sure. But no, I mean, he was honestly the biggest problem when we got him home. Because I put him in a galvanized steel, like 4x2x2 container, like a old water tank basically, and it pisses me off because number one, that thing's kind of expensive, a lot more expensive than I thought it was, but I have one in my attic. I've told you about this thing. It's flipped upside down. I can move it, but they framed all around it, so I can't get the thing out of my attic.
That's weird.
You know, the backside of my house is an addition.
Mm-hmm.
Where they added that section on, they put all the framework going up. So there is no space in there for me to pull that thing through.
Wow.
So, yeah, I've got a stock tank that's apparently worth roughly $140 up in my attic.
But
that, I can't get it down.
That makes me think, what's in it?
I've flipped it already because that was the first thing I found when I got up there. And I'm like, why in the world would anybody have an animal tank up in the attic? But no, it's just there. It's just like somebody had it and flipped it up there upside down. But
gotcha.
They had to have done it from the old side of the house, and that side of the attic is now closed off. You can't get up through that side.
Gotcha.
So yeah, when we got them home, of course, all the kids grab them and start, you know, naming them. And I said, I'm going to be real honest with you. You all can name your chickens if you want, but just understand that one day, that will also be a chicken sandwich.
Right.
And they're like, well, you can't kill these ones. They're not eaters. And I said, well, as far as I'm concerned, if I cook it long enough, it's an eater chicken.
Right.
I mean, I'm not trying to be harsh, but break them. You better know the reality, because I couldn't eat my dog. I have too much closeness, too much of a friend in my dog. You know, I couldn't eat my dog. I'm not going to try to make friends with chickens that look like they're going to taste good to me.
Right. So, you know, like Ann named all our chickens when we first got them.
Oh, mine all got names too already.
She named them after characters from the Big Bang Theory. So there's Amy, Penny. There's a four women in the Big Bang Theory. Amy, Penny. Bernadette, which we called our chicken Bernadette. And then there's one other one. So far, Amy is the only one we still have from that original flock.
Yep.
So we have Bernadette still there. Or no, Amy. Amy's the big bitchy one. So we still have Amy. She doesn't lay eggs, so she's going to be the first one in a pot. But there's also, we got a red chicken 2 years ago, and now I have two more young Buff Orpingtons. I just call them the twins, and the red one I call Red. Because, like I said, there might be a meal. I mean, they're cool. I mean, they're smart. You can train them on stuff. I mean, they love snacks that I give them and all that. You call them, they come. I mean, they're great in that regard, but make no mistake about it. If it comes to it and I want them, they're going to be food.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, I mean, I'm okay if you want to name them, but just understand that old Julie might end up on my sandwich pretty soon. I mean, seriously, that's how it's going to be.
Right. Yep.
So what was your reason behind getting chickens?
There's actually a couple of reasons. One big one was eggs. I like to have eggs, and there's nothing better than fresh farm eggs.
Do you eat eggs every day?
No, every couple of days.
Okay.
But right now I'm going to have to start eating more, but I might hard boil a bunch and do something with that. But the other reason was ticks, fleas, beetles, bugs, etc. Moles. Chickens take care of all that. Since I've had,
if they're free ranging around your yard, though,
right? If they're free ranging, which mine are,
yeah,
I have not had a problem with spiders, ticks, fleas, anything in my yard since I got those chickens. And you can tell the difference inside my yard versus outside my yard, because outside my yard I have mole trails all over the place. Mm-hmm. Inside the yard, not a single one.
See, in my yard's ripped up with them, but you knowing where I live, it would cost me a lot of money to fence this place in so nothing could get out of it or into it.
You could just do a section of it, though, chain link.
That's what I might end up doing. Yeah. And, I mean, it's probably going to be a quick throw-up kind of a wire fence for now.
Yeah.
Until, like I said, my goal is not to live here forever.
Right.
So I don't want to set everything up for permanence when I'm not planning on that.
Right.
So how big is your coop? It's like 6 feet long or something, isn't it?
Maybe so, originally, my daughter brought me what they call a traveling coop.
Yep.
So it actually has wheels on it.
Yep.
And you can pick that up and move it. And that's big enough for about four to five chickens. So it's all chicken wire, floor, walls, roof. And then there's a nesting box in the back. That's where the axle is. It has the wheels on it. And there's handles on the front of the gate where the front is. So I could, as a matter of fact, for quite a while, that's what I was doing until the chickens got used to it, is I'd put that out in the yard or put the chickens in there, and then I would move it every day or two to a different spot in the yard so they had fresh forage to supplement their food and all that. But so what I did is I moved that next to my workshop, and then I built a coop around that. So that is actually 8 foot by 10 foot.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to. Like I said, I'll repurpose what we had back there, and I've got some extra lumber sitting around from, you remember my kid's amazing tree fort they built with 47 million nails. but yeah, I've talked to you about it, dude. I'm so sick of coming home to kids sitting on a TV. Like, we're going to do something different, and building that coop is going to be part of that. Yep. And everybody's going to work together on it. Yep. You know that. And I told Olivia, my daughter, somebody's going to have to check for eggs every day once they start laying. I'm going to need somebody to do that. I need somebody to check on the water. I need somebody to check on the food. Yep. I'm trying to, not only am I trying to be more self-sufficient for myself and for my family, I'm trying to teach my kids more responsibility. Yep. Because you know as well as I do, a lot of the working crowd, these new people coming into the working crowd, a lot of them don't have it.
Yep.
You know, so I don't want that to be my kids. And I'm trying my damnedest to make them know that not everything's going to be handed to you. You got to work for some stuff.
And here's something else you're going to have to teach them, cleaning that coop out.
Yep.
And actually, chicken crap is good fertilizer.
You see, and that's good for my garden.
So like in my coop, for their bedding, I have cedar shavings or pine shavings. I think you're supposed to use one over the other, but that's what I have. And then I put straw on top of that. And probably every few weeks, I have to clean that out.
Okay.
And then also, they like to have sand to dust in.
Oh, okay.
Because that's how they keep themselves clean and everything else. And you'll find they'll just like, I don't know if you've ever seen a turkey dust bowl.
Oh, yeah.
Chickens, the same thing. They do the same thing.
Well, it's not going to find much sand in my yard.
They'll make it. If you don't have it, they'll make it.
As long as they do it in that coop.
Right.
Otherwise, I could buy sand and put it in there.
Right. And then a lot of people recommend, and I have some here, even though there's enough small stones and sand around, I don't have to give it to them very much, but they need something. Birds like that need something solid and rough to help them digest.
Yep.
So they keep that in their crop. So I have a bag of crushed oyster shells because it also contains calcium. And every now and then I'll put some of that out and they'll eat that with their feed. And that helps them with their digestion. But if you have a lot of small stones and sand and grit in your yard, they probably aren't going to
eat. Hey, if them chickens will pick up rocks, I will love them forever.
They will, but they'll put them where you don't want them.
They already are where I don't want them.
Like along my fence, I put pea gravel along the bottom of my fence all the way around to help with drainage away from the wood fence.
Yeah.
They've now started to dig along that whole thing, and they go in there and dust in it, and they're picking the bugs out of it and all that, but they've kind of created a trough along the edge of the fence now.
Yeah.
But yeah. They're a blast to have around for sure.
Well, and I think the lady said that 2 months they'll be big enough to move outside.
Yeah. It doesn't take long.
Yeah. So, I mean, like I said, it's going to be an experience for sure, but I'm not thinking we'll have any problems. We just got to get to making a coop. And because honestly, I went the opposite direction from work. I stopped at the gas station, got gas, and said, I'm just going to stop at Tractor Supply real quick. So I went back by work to go to Tractor Supply, and I walked in and I saw, I think the chicks were $5.49 a piece, and I was kind of pricing stuff up, and I'm like, well, that won't be so bad. So I got them, came home, and then we're scrambling to find something to keep them in that the stinking cat will keep its paws out of.
Mm-hmm.
So I then had to run back to the Tractor Supply here locally and find a tank for them. And then we put chicken wire over the top of it. I ratchet strapped that down, cut an access hole in the top that I can zip tie shut so the cat can't fall through it, but they can still access the water and the food and cleaning it and everything. But yeah, it's sitting right there upstairs now. And yeah, might have to have some new coyote killing sounds up.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's when I was growing up, my grandpa always had a farm and I used to spend a lot of time down there, up there, I should say. And a lot of his neighbors had farms. So I grew up when we would go up there spending time around those farms. When growing up up there at the farms, I spent a lot of time around different farm animals. We had one of my grandpa's neighbors had a lot of goats.
Okay.
And I would go down there and hang around the goats. My grandpa didn't have livestock. He always had crops, apples, pears, peaches, cherries, asparagus, and blueberries is what he grew when I was growing up. So I got to spend time around that. And that's one of the things, you know, you always had that supply of fresh fruit and vegetables.
Yeah.
You always had a garden growing up. But the neighbors had, you know, animals, ducks, chickens, rabbits. One of my neighbors growing up was our 4-H leader, and he always had rabbits. I mean, he'd have over 100 rabbits, and I would go over there and help take care of them. You know, he'd pay me when they're on vacation to take care of the rabbits. And then the farms up by my grandpa's, all the animals they have. So I kind of grew up for quite a while in my childhood around that stuff.
Yep.
And I always liked it. Having the animals, now being in town, we're pretty limited. And I know some communities won't let you have any animals like that.
I never asked.
Right, but where we're at, you know, we can have the chickens. We're just limited to how many we can have. And I have a couple other neighbors that have chickens too. And we've had the one neighbor I talked to actually is a city manager. He's seen fox around. He's had possums in there. I've had a possum in the coop. I've had raccoons around. One night I heard the raccoons trying to climb that wooden fence because my bedroom's right next to it. And I heard them trying to climb it and got out there and chased them away. But our biggest thing is that I've been concerned with is hawks.
Yeah. Anything hawks. Overhead, Dan. Right. Overhead predators.
Skeeter Beckman from, he used to run Snug Harbor in Muskegon. He actually posted a video a while back. He had a hawk go into his coop and he ended up catching it and releasing it out of his coop. He caught it with a, threw a towel over it.
Yep.
Took it out of the coop and took it off. And I don't remember if he, if they ended up killing any of his birds or not, but that's probably the biggest concern I have around here with how my setup is now.
Yeah. I mean, we're seeing a lot of bald eagles around here now too. Yep. So I mean, that'd be cool though. If one wants to come down and eat a chicken, you sit in my yard and enjoy it.
They will, because I had a landowner a while back, this was a couple of years ago, that thought he was losing chickens to coyote or fox, asked me to come up there. And I went up and I walked his property and all I seen was raccoon tracks and bear tracks.
Oh.
And I asked him, I said, well, what about hawks and stuff like that? Oh, I don't see them around much. I said, okay. So we set some DPs, which is dog-proof traps for raccoons. And I want to say that first year we trapped probably 20 raccoons off his property. But after we started trapping, he had originally started, I think he had 20 or 30 birds, and he was down to like three or four. And then he was down to one. And he gives me a call. He says, hey, I found out what was killing my chickens. I said, yeah, what was that? He says, I came home from work and there was a bald eagle eating my last rooster out in the yard. I said, yeah, it's, you know, owls, hawks, falcons,
eagles, America.
Right.
That's America coming down for a bite to eat.
Right.
No, so, I mean, that's probably going to be our biggest, besides the fact that I know there's a couple fox running around right here. But yeah, we're just going to make it as strong as we can, and everybody's going to have to be on the lookout.
Yep. But there's a lot to be said for that self-reliance. I mean, you guys are doing a garden, so you have vegetables, fruit, then now adding, you know, a meat product or protein to it with eggs and chicken. I mean, a lot can be said for that.
Au naturel venison.
Exactly. Fish.
Venison. Yeah, fish. Fish is another big thing, you know, that's kind of in my small little hiatus from coyote hunting here. I've been doing some fishing, trying to start getting that fish going, you know, because I know I've said it before, but I couldn't talk my wife into eating any kind of fish before until I learned how to properly bread it, properly deep fry it. And now once it comes off the plate, she's tearing it up. So keeping fish, venison, all that stuff that is from natural, you know, it's not coming out of a store. That makes me happy.
Yep, exactly. I completely agree. There's only one other thing that I've thought about that I enjoy the heck out of, and I would love to be able, well, there's two things that I'd like to be able to produce for myself: honey and maple syrup. And I have like two maple trees on my property. I don't know how much sap I'd be able to get out of those, so I probably wouldn't be able to produce a lot of sap, and I'm not going to deal with bees. Otherwise, I would love to have honey. I mean, we have enough bee honey producers around here, small ones, that I can get honey, no problem. Yeah. But that would be nice to add to something that you were able to produce on your own.
How about this? I got a maple tree in my backyard, too. Next year, we'll both get the stuff to tap trees, and we'll each tap our trees in our yard, and we'll learn syrup by together that way.
Okay. I've done it before.
I never have.
See, we actually had a class in high school called conservation.
They didn't care to teach us that when I was graduating.
Right. Well, you're younger than I am. You're from different generation. But in our class, that's one thing we did is, as a class, we went out, tapped maple trees, made maple syrup in class. The guy that taught the class was a hunter, and he brought in elk steaks. So we'd make pancakes in class, have the maple syrup that we made, and we'd have elk steaks for breakfast.
That's a pretty good teacher.
It was. We did everything in that class. So we did taxidermy. We did maple syrup. We had to be able to identify like all the major species of ducks that you'd encounter. We had to learn about fish, streams, waterways. We had to identify trees by their leaves and bark.
See, I need to learn that one.
We had all kinds of that stuff back in high school. And unfortunately, they've since discontinued that class. But that was my absolute favorite class in high school. There ain't no doubt about it.
Yeah, I was talking to you about, you know, I listened to the Meat Eater podcast pretty religiously. I've been nonstop for 320 episodes now, I think. And they were just talking to somebody on one of the episodes, and he said, you know, the worst thing about a lot of hunters these days, I don't remember who was saying it, I'm not putting words in anybody's mouth. Somebody said, basically, all these hunters can go out and kill deer, but when they're doing it, they can't tell you what kind of tree their stand is in. That's kind of the kind of person I am. I don't know my trees. I could tell you if I'm sitting in an apple tree. Mm-hmm. I could tell you if I'm sitting in a pine tree, but I couldn't tell you what kind of pine tree. And I need to learn that stuff too, because deer like different sources of food from different trees at all times of the season. I need to take the time to learn that stuff, but that's all, you know, a couple of years ago, I didn't give a crap about that. I've kind of, I don't know, priorities are changing just a little bit, and I'm seeing stuff is more important now that everything's kind of getting insane. It's like, I need to learn this stuff for everybody, you know?
And there's so many things you can do with that knowledge too. I mean, like from a survival aspect, did you know that, and I'm not advocating this because I think it's illegal, but if you take the bark off a birch tree, even if it's wet, it'll catch fire no problem.
Is that illegal?
It is illegal to cut down birch trees.
Oh, well.
Okay. And I don't know about stripping the bark, but I know you better check on it.
I mean, that's what we used to pick up off the ground to make fires when I was a kid.
Yeah, because even if it's wet, it burns great.
Yeah, it just curls up real quick and
poof, and big flame. You know, being able to tell the difference between like a white oak and a red oak, because deer often prefer one acorn over
that. I can tell. That I can tell if the leaves are on the tree.
Yep. Now, some of the more obscure trees, I don't think I can identify. Like, might be harder for me to identify, like a walnut or like a witch hazel or something like that. But most of like your hardwoods and your semi-soft woods, stuff like that, I can usually identify.
Yeah. The more time I spend out in those woods, you know, I'd like to know what the heck I'm looking at all the time.
Right.
And I mean, Sunday I went for a 3-mile walk. I mean, I know where the oaks are. I know where there's some cedars and pines, but
I can guarantee you that most of your mushroom hunters know how to identify a popple tree.
Oh, I can tell you a popple too. Thank you to Steve Thomas for teaching that one. He taught me basically to look up the tree, and where a branch comes out, it'll have kind of a V underneath it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've ever looked at it that way, but when you look at where the branch comes out, it forms like a V in the bark.
Okay.
And as far as I've been told, that's kind of the only tree that does that really. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm kind of looking forward to that too. We talked about that on the trip too. Morel mushrooms, wild onions.
Yep.
And then I actually did pick up some onion bulbs.
Did you?
To try planting those. Okay. So we're going to go bigger with the garden, make ourselves a chicken coop. We got a busy season coming.
That's good, though.
Yeah. Hopefully outside.
Right. So let's move on to another subject here. And as I told Josh before we started this podcast, I'm not trying to pick on anyone in particular. As a matter of fact, I'm going to talk about this a lot myself. But we all make errors in the field. You know, a lot of times when we show videos or we talk about stories, it's about the successes. Have we shown our failures? Absolutely. Do I show mine as much anymore? Not so much anymore. I mean, I still will, but not a lot.
Yep.
Just because I know people don't necessarily want to watch the failures. But the key is what we can learn from those failures. So what I want to hear from you, Josh, is tell us a couple of memorable failures in the field, whether it be a
Sight Mark Photon days.
Whether it be a miss or something else that was a failure in the field that you learned from. I mean, obviously misses, there are ways to go back, especially now when you can record everything, by going back and looking at it and trying different techniques, you know, what you've learned from it. But What's your most memorable? Let's start with this. What's your most memorable miss or misses?
The one that always comes to mind, and mostly because it irritates me the most, was for anybody that's followed us for any length of time, when I first got my very first triple with that 243, that Night Vision Ruger 243. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to crap talk to companies. I already mentioned what scope I was using at that time. I killed three in one field, boom, 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 three of them dead. Went a mile down the road, called in a double, would have had my best solo night right there in two sets. And I missed them both inside 100 yards and found out that my scope was no longer on zero again. Okay. That is one that always sticks out to me because I think that was about the time where I said, I'm about ready to hang this crap up because I'm so sick of it. And
so was that for sure? That, I mean, I think I know the answer to this, but that was for sure a problem with the optic you were using.
Can anybody ever really say that?
Well, here's the question. What were you using to shoot up? Were you shooting offhand? Were you shooting sticks? Were you shooting tripod?
At that point, I think I was still sitting on a seat and a bipod.
Okay.
I think. I don't know that. No, you know what? I bet you I was shooting off of a tripod at that point.
Okay.
Because it was when I had a thermal handheld, a night vision scope, I had evolved to the tripod by that point.
Okay.
But I mean, how many times did I come up and hunt with you where I'm like, we better go check this thing zero.
Yep.
And we did it. And every single time,
yep,
it was nowhere near where it needed to be.
I remember being with you when you called someone that knew about those scopes and basically taking the whole damn thing apart to figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah. And I never got it right. And like I said, I'm over the point of crap talking companies. Quite honestly, I'm pretty sick of everybody that just lives on doing that.
Right.
But after I switched scopes, that problem for a while at least went away.
Yep.
Now I'm struggling again, Kevin.
Right. You know, one of mine, and this, you know, in terms of misses, since that's what we started talking about first, when I first started predator hunting, I was shooting offhand.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have sticks. I didn't have a tripod. I didn't have anything. And my worst streak, I missed 10 coyotes in a row.
I remember that. We were friends.
Yep. And I remember showing you pictures of empty casings in my hands. And
that was our text message between each other all the time. Yep. Just a pile of empty brass. And we're like, well, that could mean you got one dead or zero. How many?
And for a long streak there, it meant nothing. I mean, it affected me so bad that, I mean, it brings you to tears practically. And then you go to the range and then you shoot and you realize a gun is on and then you really are in tears. Like, you're like such a tool because you know,
you just suck.
Right. Yeah. But that was what I learned from that is I transitioned to shooting sticks.
Yep.
Now, did I ever miss with shooting sticks? Absolutely. And the funny thing is the times that I missed with shooting sticks were mainly close range shots.
Yep.
I can remember a couple times at the same property, set up in the daylight, back to the woods, watching a field, expecting the coyote to come out in the field. And instead they came right up the wood line next to me.
Yep.
I'm a right-handed shooter. They came in on my right. So I had to transition while on the sticks or lift the gun off the sticks, which of course, if you lift it off the sticks, sticks fall, coyote's gone. Still throw a Hail Mary at them and miss them. Those ones bothered me a bit too, but not quite as bad because I can rationalize that.
Well, here's another one, Kevin. The UP. How close was that coyote that I missed behind us that night?
Oh, yeah.
Right inside the woods. 10 yards, maybe.
Yeah.
We could hear it walking.
Yeah.
And I took the shot straight on and I was aimed. I think I put it at the
bottom of his chest.
Its head.
Oh, did you? Okay.
I don't remember. I think I put it at the top of its head because I thought it was going to shoot low.
Mm-hmm.
And you said, no, that close. Is that right? You want to aim low? I did the opposite of what you said needs to be done at close range.
Well, based on most recent experiences, when they've been really close and I'm putting it center, I'm hitting low.
So then I must have held it low thinking it was going to shoot high.
Right.
I know I had the video of it, and right. we could see that I did that on purpose, thinking right. at that close of range, I was going to smack it.
Right.
And instead, we watched that coyote haul ass and go back to where it came from.
Yep.
That one sticks out because that is a duh moment where coyote should have been dead by every means, and it wasn't.
Right.
Because it was so close, and I compensated the wrong direction.
Right.
That was not a good one either. I think I walked out kicking the ground on that.
Another one that was a bad miss for me was the one and only time I've ever seen and had a shot at a black coyote here in Michigan, or ever, period. So that time, I think I was still shooting offhand at that time. And I had this pair of coyotes coming in and eating my deer bait. This is back when we could bait in Michigan. And there was a black coyote. I still have the trail cam pictures. There was a black one with a normal gray one that were coming in and eating my deer bait on trail camera. So I went out and deer hunted that spot because it was deer season. And I had this doe come up out of the low ground. Right behind this doe, this black coyote was following her. And at that time, I tried to lip squeak, and it completely ignored the lip squeaks and followed that doe up out of the low ground and took off where I couldn't see it. So I said,
wonder,
well,
she had some stank on her.
Right, something. So at that time, I'm like, all right, I'm going to go call them. So I went out, set up, same spot, put my caller out, called. Here they come. Black one and the silver one. Came right down to where I wanted them to. Got on the gun, shot at the black one, missed it. It started walking. It didn't run. It walked away. The silver one, the gray one, stopped right there looking around. I shot, dropped that one in his tracks. No problem. Went back to the black one, still walking. Shot two more times. Watched my bullets hit underneath it. Never touched that coyote.
Wasn't meant to be.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, that one just haunts me because, like I said, it's the only black coyote I've ever seen.
Dude, but combined, together hunting, what we've known each other since... I don't know what year anymore.
Yeah, it's been a while, probably around 10 years.
Hunting together, we've missed easily 100 coyotes together.
Oh, probably.
You know, and combined with other people that we've taken hunting, anymore, I mean, right now it's kind of pissing me off because for a little while there, my name was not brought up when it came to missing. But I've kind of slowed down. I was doing it a lot more often. Every shot was this. You know, at a certain point, in a certain way, every shot was the same. Now it's like relearning it again.
Right.
Which is weird because I've shot a fox this year. I shot, I think, two or three coyotes this year. I mean, it's not like I've forgotten what I'm doing, but when it comes to shooting, I'm almost positive I'm going back to that left pull. Every yep. time I squeeze the trigger, I'm pulling it left.
Yep.
And I know that's probably what I'm doing, but on that one Friday night, you had been talking to me and a couple other guys. Mud Sowers had mentioned hunting it or putting your hand. What do you say?
He called it the monkey grip.
Which is just means keeping. So since I'm shooting an AR, I have the thumb hole or the thumb.
Pistol grip.
The pistol grip on it. And instead of wrapping my thumb around the back of the grip, I held it on the same side as the rest of my fingers, correct?
Yep. Yes.
That's what I tried to do Friday night because I'm like, well, if I'm going to pull it, I don't want to pull it, not in front of three other dudes.
Yep.
And I did it anyways. Right. I still have to check that video, but I'm going to guess that's probably what happened. I pulled right. it one way or the other.
Yep.
And I'm going to do it again. I mean, might not be the next one, but it's going to happen.
Right.
And at a frontal shot, I've taken pictures with a measurement and posted them on our page before. And I'd have to go back and look at them. But I think a frontal shot is like four and a half inches on a coyote.
All right, probably.
That's a doable target, but one little tiny flinch and it's a running off coyote that's not even touched.
Well, not only that, but when you're looking at one, especially in thermal, but in any optic, really, you see the whole coyote.
Yep.
But you don't sometimes think about the fact that an inch to 2 inches on either side is nothing but fur.
Yep.
You know, so you may think you're centering it, but it doesn't take much to pull and you're just burning fur as opposed to dropping the coyote.
Yeah. I mean, I would just much prefer a broadside shot, but the way that coyote came in, we watched him and we talked about this after he came in once and he kind of checked up and I was on him at that point, but he didn't check up hard.
Right.
Then the second time he was kind of trotting and that time he locked up.
Yep.
And I felt like he was about to start turning. And so I squeezed it off, and it was a plenty doable shot, but it just, I didn't do it.
I've had several of those early this year as well, too. I mean, I got the videos of them around here somewhere probably, too. Just ones that I'm thinking, okay, this is a gimme. I got it. Boom. And the coyote runs off, and I'm like, what the hell just happened?
Yeah, exactly.
You know? And it just baffles you. You go back and look at the video, and sometimes you still look at the video, and you're like, I still don't know how I missed that coyote.
Well, before you get off of here, remind me, and before we end this whole thing, remind me, and I'll hook up the video and share my screen with you, and we'll both see what I did. Because, I mean, I wasn't off by far based on Tony's video.
Right.
I just haven't hooked up my scope yet to pull the video. So, no, there's a bunch of them, though. I mean, that's why there's a shirt going, you know, with my name on it that said, missed another pretty easy shot.
Yep.
And I just take it. It is what it is. Right. I shoot at enough coyotes. I miss a few, too.
Everyone's going to miss at some point, no matter what. And if they tell you they've never missed a shot in their life, they're lying to you. Or they've only shot like once or twice in their life.
Or they don't shoot. I'm still happy to know that I'm calling them in close enough for me to shoot them.
Right.
And I know my shot is safe either way. So even if I did miss, I wasn't shooting at nothing else.
Right.
You know, I'm content with myself being a loser for Friday night.
And, you know, the other thing, too, is the learning curve going from shooting one way to another. And, you know, it's funny because it used to be, you know, like I said, I started off shooting offhand. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I got some, I missed a lot. I got some, missed some. Then I transitioned after that streak of missing 10 in a row. I switched to shooting sticks. Shooting sticks improved it a lot.
Well, and a lot of this too was daytime.
Right. Now with shooting sticks, the thing you run into is, you know, movement transitioning. If, you know, like I said, if it's coyotes coming in on the right-handed shooter, you're facing center. You have to transition. So either you have to take your gun off those shooting sticks, or if they're attached like that setup you're using with a swagger, you just pick the whole thing up and move it. Yeah. Or you have to hold, my sticks are freestanding, so I have to hold the sticks, move the rifle together. I mean, one thing that people see if they watch my Bobcat videos, because that's how I'm shooting my Bobcat videos, is you'll see the scope going up into the trees. But, oh, that made me nauseous watching that. Well, I had to pick the gun up and move it to make that shot.
Yeah,
I
love those comments. Keep them coming, folks.
Sure, yeah. And there are people out there that say they can't shoot off sticks.
Yep.
You know, I feel confident in it. I don't feel I'd have a problem with it. It is definitely more stable than shooting offhand. Then we've transitioned to shooting off a tripod.
And I think everybody goes a couple misses.
Oh, yeah.
There's
definitely a learning curve to that. I mean, there was for me in terms of both shooting off it and the level of quality of the tripod I was using. The first tripod I got was one off Amazon that cost me like $60. I think it was like K&F Concepts camera tripod. I mean, the bottom part of the legs were probably about as big around as my finger.
Yep.
And I felt good using it. But then once I upgraded from that to a slick 700, I'm like, holy crap, this thing is much more stable. And the ball head, you know, better ball head. I'm like, oh, yeah, this is better. You know, my hit percentages probably went up from there, from both learning to shoot off it and getting better quality equipment. Now I'm shooting that Night Snipe Elite Hunter, and that thing for me is rock solid when I do my part. You know, you look at Randy Booty's video. Now he's using a Magnum Field Pod by Caldwell.
Yeah.
It's about like having a portable bench rest that you're shooting from standing in terms of how stable it is and how set up it is. I don't want to carry something that big out in the field.
I don't either, but Randy sure don't miss very many.
No, he doesn't, especially not that he shows. he does. But he, you know, he's a damn good shot, and he's been shooting since he was, you know, like two probably. And he's what, 90 now? I mean, shooting is part of his blood.
90 now? Wow.
Wow. I probably won't listen to this.
I took a second there, but Randy Booty, I had nothing to do with that comment.
But yeah, between that, you know, shooting platform that he's using and his ability, he's a darn good shot.
Yeah, he would be a good one to spend a day on the range with.
Right.
To just yell at you and say, quit doing that, dummy.
Right.
You know?
Yep. And you know, that's something about it, especially, you know, if you're going to take a new hunter out and you're going to want to put them like night hunting on a tripod, My advice personally is to take them to the range first and have them shoot off that first.
Yep.
And that's both to help have them be more confident in their shot, so they have a feel for it before they do it, and for safety. You know, you want them to be familiar with those controls, how that's going to feel, everything else. I mean, it's just part of a learning curve. And if you're going to take someone new out, or if you're going to venture that way, take it to the range and shoot it at the range first before you take it out hunting.
Yeah. Now, I was blown away because the two guys I took out during the tournament this year, Wyatt and Kevin, they are good shots, but they had never shot at night. They had never done any kind of night hunting. They had never shot off tripods. I don't believe they had ever shot an AR. And I was like, look, you know, this is what it all is. If we need to go find something, we will. And they're like, no, we got it. We got it. I'm like, okay. I was expecting misses. I told you that.
Mm-hmm.
I expected to call in and see coyotes run away, and I was fine with it. Wyatt shot his very first coyote at 200 yards with that 223 AR, smoked it off that tripod. And that was using an old Giotto Silk Road tripod with a Night Snipe NS67 ball head on it. I do not prefer a ball head. It is all personal preference. I do not prefer one. I only have two tripod setups. I had two guys on guns, so everybody had to pick something. Shot his first coyote, dumped it, no problem. Well, then we get to the next, I think it was the next spot or two after that, and I call in a double, and his dad's on my 243. First one stops, boom, he drops that one. Second one goes out to like 300, sits or turns around and looks at us, and I said, if you want to try it, now's the time. Put it right on top of his head, and he smacked that thing right in the mouth. Kevin, when I got back to my gun, because I was going to take care, I was handling, taking care of everything, putting everything on tripods. I was in charge of that. When I got back to that, he did not have any bit of tension on that head at all. So that gun was just flopping. And I'm like, how in the world did you shoot it like that? But he's used to shooting. I mean, he's not a tournament, I guess, but he goes to shoots, you know.
Yeah, I know he shoots pistol leagues.
Yeah, exactly. So he's used to shooting. And I was blown away that anybody could go out, not even tighten down the head that we're using to keep you steady, and boom, boom, smacks his first two.
So you know what makes me wonder about that? And you probably weren't watching him because you're watching the coyotes, but I wonder how he was holding that.
I don't know.
Because myself, I only have one hand on the gun.
Yeah, my hand's always on the tripod. And
yep. I wonder if he had the tension off and was actually holding both hands on the gun.
It could have been. I don't care.
who was it that did a video on that was actually pretty decent? He did a video a while back on how he shoots up a tripod, foot position in relationship to the tripod, you know, holding the tripod. And then using very little pressure on your shoulder, and then again, less pressure on your shooting hand, to help people learn how to shoot off a tripod. I would really like to at some point, and I'm still trying to get him on here, but the military is actually adopting shooting off tripods a lot too.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to get one of the guys from Marksmanship Training Center on here and talk to them about their experience using that platform. And any tips he would have on shooting that way.
Have you heard if they're using, what kind of head?
I don't know. There's a few different ones. Okay. I don't know exactly what they're using. I'd have to, that's another reason to talk to them, is find out what exactly they're using for equipment on that.
Well, and here's another thing when it comes to shooting. When I go shoot at a target, I shoot my guns. You know, if I'm with you or something and I got the good ability to use a bench, I'll sight it in that way.
Yeah.
We've talked about it before, shooting it. Some people will say if you're not going to sight it in the same way you're going to shoot it, it's not going to be the same. I feel like that's not true. If your gun's sighted in, your gun's still going to be sighted in, right?
Yes and no.
Because okay, explain.
The more outside factors you have contributing to the gun, the more likelihood there is for error. So when you're on a bench or you have your gun in a really good rest you are testing the mechanical ability of that gun. If you look at, you know, bench rest shooters, some of them, the only thing that touches that gun is their trigger, right? So kind of like shooting a bow. When you pick up a bow, like when we were talking to adjustable red dot guys, you pull up your bow, you draw back. When you're trying to line up with that peep and everything, you are putting pressure on that bow.
Yep.
Okay. Rifles the same way. If you have that thing on a rest, a good rest, you're like, let's say, for example, a lead sled. A lead sled, it fits in the butt stock, anything. So your shoulder doesn't even touch that gun. Ideally, you shouldn't be touching the gun in the front either.
Yep.
There's no outside pressure on that gun. Now, obviously, when you're shooting offhand, you're losing all the support. So your muscle strength comes into play, your form comes into play. Now, the more things you add to support that gun, the less those things will influence it, but they still will. For example, shooting off a tripod, if you're holding that fore end and you're holding the back with a full grip, you're still putting some pressures and some different tensions on that gun. Now, the gun shouldn't be shooting any different, but what you're doing to the gun may make it shoot different.
Well, I mean, what I'm saying, okay, I get that then.
Yeah. So from a physical point, unless you put something on the gun, once it's sighted in, it should always shoot the same, but it's whether it's the outside influences that will affect.
Right.
For example, something, if you had, let's say you had a rifle, you zero it in at the range, it's all good. Then let's say you add a, what do they call those things?
Like a linear compensator.
Yeah. Or a dampener.
Yep.
Seen guys put those on their barrels, or a sling on your gun, especially with a bolt action where your stock might be controlling the action on a bolt action. Any of those things can change it. But again, that's an outside physical influence. If you zero that gun in with no outside influences on it, aside from weather conditions, temperature, et cetera, that gun should shoot consistent every time.
And that's how I try to shoot it when I don't have access to a good bench, is go put it on my tripod, just like I'm shooting at a coyote, hot hands, whatever I got to do for a thermal. And this is why it's funny, because pretty much anytime I post a picture of me shooting my gun or, you know, the grouping, it's all, well, that's a shitty group. Well, it's off of a tripod. I'm not trying to put them on top of each other. I'm making sure I can hit a coyote.
Right.
And as accurately as possible. But what's the point of me shooting for groups off of a bench when I'm not going to do that off of a tripod? I never physically will be able to.
Right. The big thing for me anyway, the main reason I use a bench is to zero a scope or to do load development, because I want to make sure that everything is as controlled as possible.
Yep.
Now, once I have that load developed and everything, then it's field shooting conditions or, you know, more relaxed shooting conditions.
So if you zero off a bench and you have no other influence on that gun, you get it shooting pinholes, you know, 3-in-1 hole. If you go out and put it on a tripod, is just putting it on a tripod going to make that expand to now a 1-inch group?
It should not. If there's nothing, like, so our setups, yours and mine both, are direct connect.
Yes.
The tripod connects to the rail on the bottom of the handguard. As long as you have a sturdy-ish handguard that's not going to flex, it should not affect the performance of the gun because it's a free float barrel. Now, if you have,
what are the most common kind that will flex? Is there a certain kind or a certain design or a certain material?
I would just say, you know, something that's not free floated, or, you know, you see a lot of guys out there using, like, one thing that I personally am not a huge fan of is the pig saddle style attachment points, because that right there is going to put pressures on your gun, especially if you clamp it in. Now, on a barrel that's free floated or everything, it's not going to affect it as much. But if you're on like a bolt action where it's attached to that stock and you're squeezing that stock, that could affect your shot.
Well, and you know, that's how I first started. When I got a tripod, it had a pig saddle on top of it. Yep. And we talked about that quite a few times. Don't tighten it so much. See right. if that changes it. And yep. eventually it got to be too big of a pain in the butt. Plus, it's not safe to carry it in a pig saddle. Right. And I like to carry my gun locked in right now, how I do, over my shoulder, ready to go.
Yep. To me, the if you're going to use something like a pig saddle or a similar clamping style head, you want to put that on the most solid part of the gun. So if you're running like an AR platform, I would have that as close to where your handguard ends and meets the receiver as you can get it. On a bolt action, again, I'm going to want to have that like up close to like where your magazine is going to be on a bolt action. Because when you look at how that bolt action is set into the stock, you usually have a front lug and then you have a rear attachment point where the bolts go through the stock into the action.
Yep.
Getting close to that lug is where it's going to be the strongest on the gun. So if you are going to clamp it down tight, I would want to have it right by where that area is. So you're going to impart less weird stress on the gun.
There you go. Tips for people using the saddle.
Yep.
Because a lot of people are. I mean, they are kind of more budget friendly
and they're universal.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what gun you grab, it'll work there.
Well, and a lot of people don't want to drill and tap anything, which I had no problem. I'm a CNC machinist. I'll drill and tap something fine, but a lot of people don't want to do that.
Right.
So a saddle mount, Night Snipes got their own saddle. I've got one of those and I've used that, yep. used it on the crossbow. It's really good for the crossbow. Right. Because nothing matters on that, really. It's hooked onto the bottom of where you would normally put your hand. Actually, no, I have that one on a permanent mount on a Picatinny rail.
Yep.
On the bottom. So that, but the saddle can mount the same way now.
Yep.
You know, so there's tons of different options. Not everybody has to have $500-$600 into a setup to be good off of it. Right. I mean, like you said, $60-$70 got you started, but eventually the more and more you do it, it gets to the point where how many times do you want to buy something new to replace the one that you broke?
Yep.
You know,
buy once, cry once.
Right. And we are not easy on equipment when we're out there. Tripods right. getting tossed in the back. I still haven't even plugged in my charger for my call yet. I've been home 2 days. I mean, stuff just doesn't get necessarily treated the best. Right. So
speaking of which, how about equipment failures? So we already talked about an optic equipment failure. My worst equipment failure in the field was two things. One was not loading my damn gun.
That's not an equipment failure.
It is. Well, yeah, you're right. It's not an equipment
that
failure.
It's a brain fart.
You're right. The other one that was mine, and this was when I was new to suppressors. My 223 had the Yankee Hill suppressor on it. Daylight hunt. Called in three coyotes. They were all broadside. Stacked up 1, 2, 3. Closest one was like 30 yards from me. Furthest one was like maybe 50 to 80 yards. Come out of the wood line, right in line, perfect for me. Get on the first one, pull the trigger, click. Coyote's looking at me. Of course, you know how it is on AR. I quick rack another one, click. That coyote takes off running. Second one's standing there, still looking. I'm like, what the heck, you know? Rack it again, click. That one takes off running. Then finally the last one takes off running. So three clicks on three coyotes that were standing all there, lined up perfectly in the daytime.
I'm going to take a stab here and say that your gun needed a cleaning.
Yeah. What I found out is I had too much oil in the system. And what happened was shooting suppressed, you get a lot more gases back in your action. And those gases cause that oil to turn into like sludge.
Yep.
And the firing pin was slowed down enough that it would not set off a round.
So the biggest equipment failure that, I mean, was probably my doing from disassembling, cleaning my gun and stuff. Last year, you remember this one, landowner calls me, coyotes out in the field, it's still daylight. I go out there with my AR because I was ready to, you know, it was that time where I was going to sit there a little bit past dark anyways. We're legal to do that here. So I brought the thermal gun. And you remember that probably. I called that coyote in to about 100 yards, dead broadside, and I could not get my gun to fire. You remember this?
Mm-hmm.
I called you while that coyote was in the field trying to figure out what in the world might have happened. And it ended up being that my trigger pin had fallen out.
Yep.
So it was like I had to pull it way further back than I would have needed to before. Finally figured out that that was what I needed to do. I think I emptied the magazine. I unloaded the chamber. I dropped the lower off the upper. I was looking at it, found out that that pin was gone, popped it back together, didn't load it, but racked it forward, pulled the trigger as hard as I could, and finally heard that firing pin go off, loaded the gun, got one in the chamber, shot and hit that coyote, and never found it. That was a what they call a cluster.
Right. And one in a million, too.
Yeah. Like, they don't usually stand around that long when you just, if you miss them, they ain't standing around typically that long.
Right.
But while you're standing there unloaded, gun disassembled, in your lap, on the phone with Kevin, they'll stand there and just watch you. So that's, no, that's probably like the, besides like dead batteries, stuff like that. I know we've had a couple different times even recently where we've gone out and it's like, man, I didn't even get 10 minutes before my battery died. Mm-hmm. I had that on a coyote 2 years ago. And it was my own fault. I left the scope on, went out hunting. Here comes this coyote. And I knew that my battery was pretty low. And just as that coyote got into a safe position, battery critically low, powering down. And I'm like, no. And I turned it back on, got the crosshairs on it. Boom, powered off. Turned it back on, crosshairs on it. Boom, powered off. And that's my own dumb problem for not remembering to turn it off or whatever I did. But man, that kind of stuff, man, you'll go home and drink if you're a drinker after that.
Right. Yeah. But those are the kind of things, you know, it's a wake up call on making sure to kind of give yourself a mental plan on what to check before you go out.
Yeah.
Anymore now, before I even leave my house, I power the scope on, check the battery condition, make sure there's an SD card in it. You know, when I clean my guns, I detail look at them, you know, look at your trigger pins, look at your trigger assembly, look at your buffer tube, look at the condition of everything, you know, make sure it's clean. There's not too much oil, but there's still some oil.
Yeah.
Just a lot of stuff like that, that you get in the habit of checking just to try and eliminate those failures in the field.
Yeah. I mean, everything, you kind of get set in a way, and then I know for me, I kind of get comfortable and I'm like, yeah, everything's good. And when usually it'll bite me in the ass. And you're like, you're an idiot. You didn't even check it like you normally did. You just thought it'd be okay.
Right.
I did that. My call remote, a lot of times that thing doesn't drain the batteries, but if I'm not paying attention, it'll be dead.
Yep.
How many times, I know it's happened to you, how many times have you gone somewhere and been like, I can't even turn on my remote?
Yep.
It's a good thing we carry hand calls.
Right.
You know, and that's one of the reasons why. You just never know what's going to go wrong. Obviously, we don't carry two weapons, so when a firing or a trigger pin falls out, you're not just grabbing a different rifle. But
and here's another one too. Here's another one too that happened to me. I think it was just last year out hunting with Mike. Daytime set, had three coyotes come in, daytime, charging in, perfect, right? Draw up on the first one, took a shot, missed. No big deal. Go to pull the trigger on it again. Click. Like, what the hell? Try and rack it again. Click. Try and rack it again. Click. Coyotes running all over the place. Mike's standing there waiting for me to kill him. Finally, I look at Mike. I'm like, shoot one of them. Well, of course, by this time, it's running away from him, and he took a Hail Mary Texas heart shot and missed it. But come to find out, I had the wrong ammo. I had my .223. And I tell you what, it's hard to tell the difference sometimes unless you look at the head stamp, 223 versus 204. And what I'd found out is I grabbed the wrong mag or put the wrong ammo in the wrong mag and had 204 mixed in with a 223. So 204 will not close on the action. So the reason I was getting a click is because my action wasn't closing.
Which could have potentially saved you from a problem?
No, because the action wouldn't close on it.
I know, but if it would have, and that would have gone boom.
Yeah, it would have been an out-of-battery detonation, which would have been bad.
Which means what?
Basically, your bolt isn't locked in, so there's nothing to hold all the explosive force. And when that happens, it usually blows the gun apart. That's why there's a safety feature built into the AR-15, where as long as that bolt's not closed, it should not contact the firing pin.
Should not.
Correct. And 99% of the time, it's not going to. But there are different cartridges. Like, for example, you can fit, what is it? I think you can fit a 300 blackout into like a 223 or vice versa.
For those listening, don't do this on purpose.
Don't do it because it's bad. I've seen pictures of guns blown apart and people get injured because of it. So my point being, make sure you have the right ammo for the right gun when you're going out.
Yeah, that could have been a bad, bad night.
Right, exactly. You know, and that's especially if you have rounds that are similar in shape or size. You know, take a second look at the head stamp. Make sure you got the right ammo for the gun. I mean, I've heard of people, you know, go out hunting with an .06 and then they take 270 ammo. You know, for me, the 223 and the 204 are close enough together that looking at them offhand, it's hard to tell a difference unless you have them like side by side. And even then it can be a little bit hard. But one thing I do is I mark on my magazines now which cartridge goes in that magazine. So I have two mags or whatever it is for 223. I write right on them with a white paint pen, 223.
Yep.
Same thing with the 204. I write right on them, 204. Just different things like that to try and eliminate errors in the field.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I said, you kind of get comfortable.
Yeah.
And that's when you make a dumb mistake. And I mean, dumb mistake can be, I know the coyotes always come out of this spot and you're 10 minutes in, turn around, there's one walking up right behind you because you weren't paying attention.
Right.
You were too comfortable knowing that they were going to probably come from one spot.
Yep.
That kind of stuff, I get myself into those bad habits. And that's just like with shooting right now. I went the last 2 years probably missing, I'll say maybe 10 coyotes in the last 2 years. That to me is pretty good. I, you know, whatever. Yeah. Some people might not have missed any of them, and good for you.
Right.
Myself, I'm okay missing that many, but now it's like two in a row. And I will tell you honestly, too, that one Friday night, it's been a little while since my heart's gone that much on a coyote because it just, I've done a lot. It's not the same excitement to me now as it always was. And that Friday night was probably a part of it because I could feel my heart on that one coming. And a lot of it was probably because I knew I was going to catch shit after I missed it. But you know, when I go shoot at the range, I'm not shaking. I'm not breathing hard. My heart's not beating hard. I can pound a target all day long, go out in front of me and everything, or go out in the coyote field, call one in, and everything that I did at the range, there's a dang good chance I'm going to forget what the heck I told myself not to forget.
Yep.
Breathe, squeeze, do all this stuff rather than whip the crosshairs to it and pull. I mean, and that's, I did that for a long time. There was a coyote, I posted the video. It's on our YouTube channel, Psionic Second Angle. I called in three of them. I think it was January. And that one, you can see, I steadied myself. I mean, I took the time to control my breathing and squeeze. But I also was not worried that any one of those coyotes was about to leave. And I kind of get myself into that, too, where one's coming in and I feel like I've seen plenty of coyotes bolt for nothing.
Yep.
Or assumingly nothing. When you see them check up to a certain point, like, you know, if they're coming and they kind of slow down and then stop and tilt their head and listen, they're going to keep coming. This one did that one time, then was coming and stopped. And that's what told me shoot now, which was dumb because how much space did we have? We could have shot that thing anywhere around us. But instead, I was the one, and Tony's saying, this one's all you, man. This one's all you.
Yep. No pressure.
It wasn't all me.
Yep.
No, but I mean, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that happens, man. We've always been pretty good about sharing our failures with people because honestly, we're no better than anybody else out there. If you're out there shooting, you're out there hunting, you're going to miss. You're probably going to hit one and not find it. And for me with a coyote, I hate that. I don't care, coyote, deer, whatever I'm hunting. If I hit it and I don't recover it, I feel pretty crappy.
Right.
Because I did not do what I was supposed to do.
Right. No, I agree.
That's ethically, humanely, quickly putting down that animal so it's not running out there and suffering. We don't want that like some people think we enjoy.
As much as I hate missing, I'd much rather have a clean miss than a bad hit.
Absolutely. And like I said, I'd much rather educate one of his coyotes. didn't do it to mine.
Yep.
But no, we had a good time. And yeah, I mean, it was just another time where I screwed up, but. I'll show you the video before we log off of here.
All right.
See what I did.
Well, I'll call it good for the night unless you have anything else you want to add.
No, you know, while we're on here together, I mean, this is just a podcast between us two. We were trying to work on a couple different ones this week and they all fell through. So we're just going to do this one ourselves. But for everybody that is listening to this, I want to say, and I know Kevin says it too, thank you guys for continuing to listen to us ramble on. We try to get a lot of good people. Our last bunch of podcasts, man, they have been fun. And the feedback that we do get, we don't get a lot. I honestly, if you're listening to this, we would appreciate more feedback. Tell us what you want to hear. Tell us who you want to hear from. If you want to talk to us about anything, tell us. Let us know, because we'll make a podcast out of it.
Yep.
You know, and for both of us are working people. You've got your wife, your family. I've got three kids, my wife, my job. You've got a job. You know, we're busy people. So this stuff is not the easiest to always sit down and be able to get recorded. So like this one's kind of just a thrown together jumble of topics. And we appreciate all you guys who have listened to them, because, you know, for us to take a little bit of time out that we do every week to make this happen, it makes it more worth it when we can see that people are enjoying it and we're seeing people comment and we're getting questions on it. Thank you guys for doing that. And if you want to, or you're willing, please just send us more feedback. Rating, review on it helps it get seen by more people. You know, it's just, we're doing it all. A lot of it is because we want to learn a lot of the same stuff as other people. We want to talk to a lot of the same people other people want to hear from.
And just for clarification, we don't get paid to do this.
No.
We're doing this because we like the feedback. We like interacting with people. We like telling stories. We like, you know, sharing stuff. We like hearing from other people. I mean, that's why we have guests on from all over and all different topics, because, you know, we like to keep it variable. You know, we like to mix things up, but it's all stuff that we share an interest in, and hopefully, you know, our listeners are too. So, you know, we're not getting paid to do this, but we're doing it because we like to do it. And that, like Josh said, that makes the feedback that much more important and helps us keep going with it.
Yeah. And even if it's negative feedback, we've heard it all.
We got to learn from it.
Yeah. You're not going to hurt our feelings. If we suck, just tell us we suck.
Right.
I mean,
I've heard that before.
Right. I mean, I enjoy talking to a lot of these people, because there's a lot of experiences that I'm not ever going to experience. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff like that, you know, going to these different countries and stuff, you know, hunting some of these places that people post videos from that are just gorgeous places. Until I see myself being able to go do that kind of stuff, I'd rather be able to talk to people that can,
right,
and get kind of learn that experience through someone else's stories, you know. And so I mean, please just keep on listening and keep following, and we appreciate everybody who has for so long.
And if you're new to the podcast, try and find a way to go back and look at some of the older podcasts we've done. I mean, we've been doing this now for what, 2 years? This
will be episode 95.
Episode 95. Go back and look at some of the previous ones. If you're just starting to follow us, because we have a lot of good content in some of our previous episodes as well. Some really cool guests that we've had on, and hopefully it's entertaining and educational, which is what we try and shoot for as much as we can. Yep. Sometimes they go a little bit more one way than the other, but we try and get both in there.
Well, and if you can't tell by listening to any of them, we're not just coyote hunters.
Right.
You know, and that's where a lot of people found us through, you know, began to follow us, was because of the coyote side of it. but we love all kinds of things. And even if it's stuff we were talking on the ride home, you know, I can't pick out a big game animal that I can say, God, I got to hunt one of them before I'm dead. But I love to hear the stories of all these other animals that people go out and hunt. That's one of the things that we love talking about. We're not just coyote hunters. We're deer hunters. We're family people. We got jobs. We got homes we got to upkeep. I like to cook all the wild game I can, especially. So it's all that kind of stuff. It's all going to be wrapped up into this podcast. And, you know, so we're not just a one-man band?
Right.
Whatever. Right. Yeah, so we like all kinds of things. But, no, please send us feedback, ratings, reviews, anything like that. Topics you want talked about, anything. We're sitting here ready and willing to take people's feedback and advice. So.
Yep. So thank you very much for joining us again. Thank you for joining me tonight, Josh.
Absolutely.
And we will see you guys next week on the Overdrive Outdoors Podcast.
Peace.